Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing reading the chapter in Bhagavatam, The Lord Blesses Sudama Brahma. And we have 29 through 34, so we'll say these all together.
Payaksena vibhashaya dhanta rukma parichadaha paryanka hemadandhani chamara vyajanani cha asanani cha haimani midupastaranani cha muktadama vilambhini vitanani jumanti cha swacha spaktika kudyeshu mahamaraka kireshu cha ratna dipan vrajamanam lalana ratna samyutaha vilokya brahmanas tatra samridhi sarvasamparam tarkayam asanir vyagraha swasamridhim adhikukim.
Translation. In Sudama's home were beds as soft and white as a foam of milk, with bedsteads made of ivory and ornamented with gold. There were also couches with golden legs, as well as royal chamara fans, golden thrones, soft cushions, and gleaming canopies hung with strings of pearls. Upon the walls of sparkling crystal glass, inlaid with precious emeralds, shone jeweled lamps, and the women in the palace were all adorned with precious gems. As he viewed this luxurious opulence of all varieties, the Brahmana calmly reasoned to himself about his unexpected prosperity. Text 33, together.
Nunam batitam mama durbhagasya svadaridrasya samridhi hetu mahavibhirtir avalokanaya naivo papajeta vadadutamasya.
Translation. Sudama thought, I've always been poor. Certainly, the only possible way that such an unfortunate person as myself could become suddenly rich is that Lord Krishna, the supremely opulent chief of the Yadu dynasty, has glanced upon me. Repeat this one.
Nan abruvano dishate samaksham. Yachish nave buryapi buri bojaha. Parjanya vatat swayam ikshamano. Darshahakanam rishabak sakame.
Darshanam Rishabha.
question is? Nanu, after all, abruvanaha, not speaking, jishate, he has given, samaksham, in his presence, yashnive, to him who was intending to beg, bhuri, plentiful wealth, api, even, bhuri, of plentiful wealth. Bojaha, the enjoyer, parjanya yatvat, like a cloud, tat, that, swayam, himself, ikshamanaha, seen, darshaha kanam, the descendants of King Dakshar, Rishabha, the most exalted, Saka, friend, May. Translation and purport. After all, my friend Krishna, the most exalted of the Dasharhas and the enjoyer of unlimited wealth, noticed that I secretly intended to beg from him. Thus, even though he said nothing about it, when I stood before him, he actually bestowed upon me the most abundant riches. In this way, he acted just like a merciful rain cloud. Sri Krishna is Bhuri Bhoja, the unlimited enjoyer. He did not tell Sudama how he was going to fulfill his unspoken request, because according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, he was thinking at the time, my dear friend has given me these grains of rice, which are greater than all the treasures I own. Even though in his own house he had no such gift to bring me, he took the trouble of begging it from a neighbor. Therefore, it is only proper that I give him something more valuable than all my possessions, but nothing is equal to or greater than what I possess. So all I can do is give him such meager things as the treasures of Indra, Brahma, and other demigods. Embarrassed at being unable to properly reciprocate his devotee's offering, Lord Krishna bestowed his favor on the Brahmin silently. The Lord acted just like a magnanimous rain cloud, which provides the necessities of life for everyone near and far, but feels ashamed that its rain is too insignificant a gift to give in return for the abundant offerings of the farmers make to it. Out of shame, the cloud may wait until nighttime when the farmers are asleep before watering their fields. The chiefs of Dashara clan, with whom Lord Krishna is identified in this verse, were especially renowned for their generosity. This description of the palace that he gave Sudama reminds me. The closest thing I can think of is when I went to the Amber Palace in Udaipur, I think it is, and they have one room where it's all inlaid with just glass, not jewels, but it's inlaid with glass, and they kind of shut it off and they turn on the lights and it like shimmers like stars all over. It's really gorgeous. So you can imagine what this must have been like with real gems and jewels all inlaid with the lights, probably just from the effulgence of Krishna making them shine as he walked around. So it's pretty amazing that he's thinking that this is all I can give. And so Sudama, find here that it didn't take him long to figure out, being a devotee, that I've been poor my whole life. This must have something to do with Krishna's hand being in this. So the devotees are trained that way to see everything, good and bad, as Krishna's arrangement. Ultimately, for our spiritual advancement, for our real eternal welfare. And Krishna is saying here that he's recognizing Krishna's glance on him. In the Bhagavad Gita, we hear that Krishna is supposed to be equal to everybody, but Krishna can't help it. He has that tendency to glance and to look at his devotee and have special affection for him. And so Sudama, he's recognizing, he can actually see Krishna's thoughts. He's seeing, yes, this is Krishna's thinking in this way that he isn't giving enough. And Krishna's also, he knows Sudama's thoughts. He knew that he had gone to the trouble of finding something to give to him, even though he didn't have anything. And so you can see that this bhakti cult, and especially it's displayed in this pastime of Sudama Brahman, is so enriched with these intimate relationships and reciprocations of the devotee and Krishna. It's we see such intense feelings in this pastime, particularly of the hearts of Sudama and Lord Krishna. And even Rukmini and the Brahmin's wife, they all have such devotion and always thinking of everyone else's welfare, not just of their own. This is the gem of bhakti. This is why it's the greatest thing that we can possibly achieve. So actually, Sudama, he didn't really even offer the chipped rice. He was thinking, well, I can't. He was too embarrassed. I can't really offer it. But Krishna accepted anyway. So we can see that this pastime in particular is seeing how Krishna accepts our loving intentions to give him the best that we have, which is very, very wonderful to him, because none of us are qualified like he is. Although here he's thinking he's not qualified. So it's quite interesting to see that he will accept the chipped rice, or he'll accept saffron sweet rice with silver foil and pistachios on top, just the same, if it's offered with love. So we have to do our best, because he's impressed by our effort, how much we can try. He's not so impressed with, you know, what we give him. But we should also think that we can impress Krishna with what we have. I have one little story to tell you that when I was still cooking the Sunday feast, maybe it was the last time I cooked the Sunday feast, there had been some other people cooking the Sunday feast, and I thought, well, it's about time, you know, I get to cook the Sunday feast, I'm going to really whip it up. And I got Ruchir, and we went in there, we got the best preparations. We thought, yeah, we're going to show everybody how we can cook a feast. And I was spicing the things and putting the salt, and I think, boy, this is kind of grainy salt. I must have gotten kosher salt or something like that. And putting everything on, and then citric acid. None of you remember that feast? Yeah, it makes my mouth pucker right now. It, you know, sour. You know, nothing I could do about it either. And everything. And I don't know, I guess you all didn't notice, but I ran home and just like stuck my head in a hole and realized, Krishna, I can't impress you. It was a sure setup for the biggest smash that I ever had in the kitchen. You know, so you know, this mentality, you know, we still have it within ourselves. And sometimes Krishna's very kind. He'll do that for us. And we can see in the pastime of the Brahmins and the Jagya Brahmins and the wives that they were trying to impress them with their yantras and tantras and all that kind of stuff. But then when Krishna asked for something, no, that's okay, we're busy here. And then the wives, they impressed them. Oh, wow, Krishna's at our doorstep. What are we going to find to give him? And they scrambled around, made a feast, you know, bingo, like that. So, of course, Krishna was very, very, very happy about that. And the Brahmins learned their lesson, too. They were very apologetic. when they saw the mercy that these wives got and the bhakti, the real bhakti that they got from their efforts. So it's typical of many religious followers that in their prayers and their offerings of their, you know, the money that you put in the donation plate and things like that, they're thinking that, you know, this is going to be, you know, please God, and then I'll probably get some good results out of that. I'll probably have a good paycheck, and I'll have a nice house and wives, and my broken leg will get fixed quickly, and all the sinful activities are going to be gone. So I've got it covered. You know, God's got everything covered. But then things don't happen that way, and so then they think, huh, I'm not going to go to Sunday school this week. So there, Krishna, or there, God. Or they get very discouraged, or they lose their faith. Prabhupada always gives that example of the World War II when they were praying, you know, save my son, and they didn't come back. And so they gave up their faith. Or else they, you know, forget God and they substitute something else in, like intoxication, and figure that'll get relief from all my distress if God can't get rid of it. Or else we see now that in the West they have so many other options for spiritual life, meditation, and just, you know, skirt the God thing and just meditate and be peaceful, and ultimately I'll become God. So this is not the Vaishnavas' thinking. We're thinking that Krishna is so extraordinary. I can't do enough for him. And you can see, especially it's displayed in this pastime, that Krishna's being apologetic, that I can't give you more. I can't do more for my devotee. And the devotee's thinking, I can't do enough for Krishna. Even I think it's Naparyaham, the expression when Krishna's talking with the gopis and saying, I can't repay you. You're just going to have to be satisfied with your own devotional service. So here I get kind of uncomfortable thinking of Krishna, you know, bowing down, washing the Brahmin's feet. I don't know about you, but I feel like he really shouldn't be doing that. Now he's being apologetic. You know, Krishna, really, this is like too much. How many of you have actually washed someone else's feet? You have? Only one person. Can you realize what it must be like? I mean, I've cut my mother's toenails and things like that, but I mean, to actually wash someone's feet and stuff, it's very humbling. And it's, you know, especially if they've been walking around, things like that. So you can imagine, you know, Krishna's doing that. He's actually washing the feet of the Brahmin. So this is quite different, thoughts of we have of God, that here he's actually doing these things. And I get kind of embarrassed thinking about it. But more so, I get embarrassed about thinking of how we offer things to Krishna. I was just thinking a few minutes ago about when we, in Portland, Oregon, we installed Gornitai deities, the paper mache ones that I think were made in Hawaii a long time ago. And we sent a picture to Prabhupada, and he sent back a letter. And he said, everything's very nice, but he said, their hair should be half the length. They're not hippies. We had it down to about their waist, something like this. So, I mean, when we look back at old photos, every once in a while we pull out some old photos of the deities, and we just like, oh my gosh, how do we do that to Krishna? We used to put ostrich feathers. In New York, they have this feather company where you can get every kind of feather you can think of. They would buy every single color you could think of huge ostrich feathers. And they put them all and rotted around his hair and everywhere. It looked like the Gala Girls, you know, Gala Girls, whatever they are, that do it in the 20s or something. And you think, oh, Krishna tolerated all these things that we did to him, you know. Even in our offerings of food, you know, I don't know that Krishna tolerated the citric acid, but sometimes you all of a sudden, you're the cook, and all of a sudden you'll go, oh my gosh, and you'll eating prasadam, you'll find one of those little scrubby things. You know, you've been scrubbing the potatoes, and Krishna lets you know, guess what, you offered me. And so we make these mistakes, you know, and look at the altar, plastic. How much plastic? Clothes and jewelry, all the jewelry. Here, jewels are just in the walls, and we're putting plastic on the deities. But we're trying, and that's what Krishna is seeing. And And so we have to keep trying, because that's what will please Krishna. And as we're trying, we're learning. We're learning about surrender and sacrifice and how much more we can surrender in this lifetime. And Krishna, he's accepting it. We feel it. If we didn't feel some reciprocation with Krishna, none of us would be in this room right now. If we didn't feel like that there is some bhakti going on in this process, we wouldn't stay. And if we're not feeling that reciprocation in some way, some satisfaction in our heart that yes, Krishna, please accept it. I think you are accepting. Then if it's not, then it means that we're stagnant and that we need to try harder. We need to pray to Prabhupada or our spiritual master to please offer these things to Krishna, tell him I'm trying. But really, we need to find out what more we can do to surrender if that stagnation is there. Because it should be a moving thing, a moving closer and closer to Krishna all the time, coming to the altar and knowing the deities more and more. We want to advance in this lifetime. And we owe Krishna so much. I mean, it's hard to realize that some people can't understand that we should give something back to Krishna. We look at most cultures, and within those cultures, there are a certain class of civilized people that know to bow down and to give something in an offering to God. It's just natural. You don't have to take a philosophical course and learn all the different philosophies and go to school and to figure out that I should bow down to somebody, that I should put my head on the ground and offer respects to somebody. We don't have to get into a big mental thing and think, oh, maybe it's a cult, maybe I'm being brainwashed. No, these people are bowing down in respect and gratitude for the Lord. And here we can see that the farmers in previous times, we hear of in the Veda culture, they were offering different grains and different foodstuffs and ghee regularly in respect, in gratitude. They would offer them to the demigods or whatever. But this was a natural thing within their heart to give it back to Krishna. Unfortunately now, the scientists are thinking, especially Monsanto and places, things like that, thinking that I'm making the produce, I'm making the food, and I'm leaving a wake of destruction behind me. Yes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because, I'm ultimately usurping the position of God. I'm the one that's creating all this food stuff. So it's actually that we are responsible to give something back to the superior power. And here are the clouds also. They're thinking that, these farmers have given me so much, I can't give back enough, so I'll kind of rain at night. I don't know if you've ever had a gift you want to give somebody and you're thinking it's not really up to par, and so you'll maybe, everyone's putting their gifts there and you'll put your gift there, but you don't put your name on it because you're feeling kind of embarrassed. Or else you'll stick it way underneath and then kind of run away, because you're thinking, oh, I should have done better than this. It's really not a suitable gift. So the clouds are thinking this is not suitable, so I'll just rain at night. So kind of hide. So this is a reciprocation. There was some communication between the different celestial beings and God and these different persons that are offering them back. We can see in Yudhisthira's time that he was giving so many things in sacrifice, so much was going on religious-wise in his kingdom. And the rain, the clouds didn't want to disturb the daily activities of the residents, so the clouds would just rain at night so that it didn't bother anything, but it saturated the fields. And the rain, and it was raining opulence like anything all over the kingdom when Yudhisthira was there, because he was such a pious king, recognized God as the supreme and him the servant. We hear of also in that he would, in these jugyas, he would use golden plates, and then after the jugya, he would just, they just left there, left on the side. If anybody wanted the gold, they could take it, no problem. We had plenty. Reign of opulence. And now, you know, we're standing in line at the Sunday feast, making sure that they just get one paper plate and that they put the thin paper plate on top because the thick ones cost more money, you know, and what less our stain, our God-like stainless steel plates, you know, that we're so worried about, you know, because we have no, it's not raining opulent anymore. We're struggling to give whatever we can to the Lord. And so now we can, you know, we can stay here and enjoy our wastefulness, and we can enjoy our greed and our selfishness and everything else that come, all the nasty results that come with it, because we don't want to offer back to God. And there's so many, you know, climate change, this change, that, help this, help that, but we just really have to learn how to surrender to God. And then things will come. Opulence will come in nature. I looked on the internet something, and something popped up about this Denver. The governor in Denver is saying why he promotes this marijuana, recreational marijuana. And he was saying, yeah, he's, you know, here's the person that's supposed to be thinking of the welfare of their state. He's saying, yes, I did it because first I wasn't into it, but then I thought, well, look at California. They're so popular because they're so loose and so in, you know, hip. So I wanna be like that. So I'm gonna legalize marijuana. And oh yes, there's been some, you know, problems now because of it, and more kids are having psychological problems. But now we have money to fix all these problems, because we're getting $100 million taxes from this marijuana. So now we can take care of the problems that we're making. Does that make any sense to anybody? Is he thinking of the welfare of anybody? Greed. Now we have more money. More problems and more money. So this is the mentality that's ingrained within our society now. Not bhakti, not giving, but the whole mentality is what we can get out of and try to enjoy ourselves. So it's really it's depressing to hear that. But we are trying to distribute the real answer to all the problems, and that is the Holy Name. That is our sacrifice. That is the sacrifice of everyone. That will rain opulence, real wealth on everybody, this Holy Name. So therefore, we take opportunities whenever we possibly can to distribute the Holy Name. And not only the Holy Name, but books too. Books and prasadam. This is real wealth that will change everybody's heart and hopefully go from greed to bhakti. I mean, what's our greatest possession in our homes? If you had a fire, what would you take out with you? Besides your loved ones, you'd take your beads. Oh, where are my beads? And your books, you don't want them to go in flames. So there's a nice story that I heard about a week ago from one lady who used to do intense sankirtan in France. And they would drop people off at different villages. And one person, they just leave them for the whole village for the whole day, just to distribute books. And so they went back to pick up this one girl, and they realized that the town was kind of in turmoil. They saw lights and sirens and things like that. And sure enough, the people found the devotees and said, I'm sorry, but one of your devotees has been killed. And they went back, and the devotee had been hit by a truck. She had been carrying her books on her head back to the car or something like that, and was struck. And so they had to go there and to identify her. Of course, they didn't know her real name. They didn't know. I couldn't understand how they don't know her name, you know. And so they had a problem with that. But when they saw her, the Bhagavad Gita was like this over her chest. And they said that they had found her that way, that she was carrying a box of Bhagavad Gita, but somehow or other the Bhagavad Gita had, I don't know if she put it there or fallen there or Krishna put it there, but it was open on her chest, and they said, we didn't know what to do, so we just left it like that. When they saw her, the Bhagavad Gita was open chest. So, you know, this intense desire to be with Krishna, Krishna is protecting us. He's there. We have to have great faith in the sacrifice that we're doing of distributing books, distributing Krishna consciousness, and chanting the holy name, and that Krishna will glance on us, and he will embrace us with his kindness, whether it be if we're made poor or if we're made rich. It doesn't matter. The devotee sees it, like Sudama is seeing it, that this is the hand of Krishna. And now what am I going to do? I have all this richness. Well, maybe I can distribute Krishna consciousness in different ways, like he's doing here. So this is keeps us trying, putting, you know, not having everything that we need to give Krishna, but supplementing it with as much of the active ingredient of bhakti as we can. And hopefully Krishna will be satisfied. Today is also the disappearance day of Kaliya Krishnadas. At first I thought it was Kala Krishnadas, but it's not the same person. Kala Krishnadas is the person of that wonderful pastime of the devotee of Lord Chaitanya who was trying, he actually achieved taking the remnants of the food of all the devotees in Bengal. And to the point where he went to Jadu Thakur and did the little thing with the mango and tried to hid in the bushes to lick the remnants. But this is Kaliya Krishnadas, and I found a little blurb on him, and he was actually Lord Nityananda's servant in his pastimes, his associate. Actually, he's an intimate, eternal associate of the Lord. And Krishna Lila, he is Lavanga Gopa, and he's one of the 12 chief Gopas in Krishna Lila. Kaliya Krishnadas was born in Katwa and helped serve Lord Nityananda. And he was very meticulous. He had his own deities of Kalachand, and he would very, very nicely take care of them. But when Lord Nityananda left, he also helped to serve Janava Mata, went with her preaching and helped serve her. So these eternal associates of Krishna, we can see that they're on the level of like Sudama Brahman. They're so dear to Krishna, and by hearing them, these pastimes of these devotees, it purifies our heart, and it should encourage us to become a servant of the servant. Never think that we're going to become these eternal pastimes. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We would be with them. But we can just be the servant of the servant of these great devotees, and be so thankful that we have this bhakti cult. And as it says here, that you know, Sudama is like a reverse in his whole life. I was poor, now I'm rich. What am I going to do? I mean, it's a nice problem to have. But he's seen that Krishna has done this. But in our lives, we get reverses. Maybe not so pleasant. A loved one dies, or we lose our job, or something happens. So we have to become very expert in seeing, yes, this is Krishna's mercy also. And then we can be relieved from that anxiety that the normal person will feel. Just like, you know, some disaster might happen, like Nanda squished your hand and things like that. But immediately she was thinking, thank you, Krishna. This is probably because of my offense. So this is the attitude that we develop by just taking part in this bhakti, practicing, praying every day, please accept me, no matter my faults. And we learn. We actually learn. And we make some advancement, getting off the bodily platform and becoming more attached to Krishna. So we should take the process very seriously and keep in the process. And if we don't feel the fire of that service, ask our God sisters, God brothers, how I can get more more in tune to surrender and to serve Krishna in this lifetime. So, anyone have any comments, questions, stories?
Well, I had a question about Janava Mata. If you, she was such an exalted Vaishnavi, but I'm wondering, I don't know any stories about her. Have you ever heard any past times of her?
Mostly after Nityananda left.
Mm-hmm.
She would go preaching, and she wouldn't publicly speak, but she would go to people's, to different things, and she was given all the respect. All the Vaishnavas would bow to her and everything. She actually, and of course she helped with that whole celebration of the first Lord Chaitanya, appearance day. And but she was, she would actually go to towns and convert everybody. She was such a powerful speaker.
She would speak at people's homes?
Yeah, she would go to different occasions, and they would ask her to speak. But she never, publicly, was a big, huge speaker. But she had great potency and made effects of wherever she went. Mm. I have a little book that has some pastimes.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting. I even mentioned this before about Sudama Brahmana, but he felt like he wasn't getting the full mercy from Krishna. When he was seeing Ramanathana, he felt like, oh. He felt like, if I was more advanced than Krishna, he wouldn't have given me all this opulence. Just because I'm not much of a Brahmin, that's why I received it.
Yeah, he was worried about his pride. He was worried about what am I going to do with my pride now? I don't want it to get big. So he's not knowing if this is really mercy or not. But he's expert at distributing his wealth.
Thank you.
So we have to get expert at distributing the wealth of Krishna consciousness, taking every opportunity to do that.
I just have a story. It's sort of similar to your citric acid story. And I was a devotee for about 4 months. We were out on traveling Sankirtan. And we were in the van. There was two devotees. I was actually in the back of the van. And the van is, as you know, back then there was sort of set up, there was boxes of incense and back to godheads and all that. And so I was having a nap in the back. It was late at night. And the devotee who was driving yelled, and I woke up, and the van was actually in midair. It had hit black ice. The van had hit black ice, which was rare. We were down in Alabama, I think. And so I woke up, and the van was in midair, about 10 feet up in the air, and all I could see was trees. Not the bottom of them, but the middle to the top of the trees. And I just started chanting, and I was just peacefully chanting. And the van hit and started rolling on the ground. About 10 feet down, it hit and rolled, and I was just chanting. Boxes are flying around, and I was just, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And when it sort of settled up against a tree and bent the van in half, and we crawled out, I had no bruises on me or anything. But I got out of the van and I was thinking, wow, I really get this whole process. I chanted. I was just peaceful to leave my body. I was so proud of myself. And the next day, there was about five of us in a car, and we were driving through a university, and I was just sitting in the back, and someone threw a snowball and it hit the car. And I went, and I went, okay, maybe I didn't quite get it.
Yeah, I should have followed Kiyija.